Well, it's that time again, folks. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I am Carolyn Nelson.
And we've got a good surprise for you tonight. I think you're going to enjoy it. I have to ask you to leave the phone lines open. Do not call. Do not call. If you do, and I answer the phone, as soon as I find out who it is, I'm going to dump you. So don't even bother, folks. We're expecting an important call from our guest tonight, who won't be calling in until about, maybe between 10 minutes after and 20 minutes after. So please do not call. Do not touch your phones. Do not pass go. Don't collect $200. Make sure you got your pad and pencil by your side, and stand by for some super-duper information. And, of course, not all of it is good news, because what we're doing really is documenting the fact that our country has gone from underneath us while we sat sleeping. And I know many of you are wondering what it's going to be like in the New World Order. And that ought to give you a little bit of taste. Does that make you want to hear more? Well, if it does, folks, hang on to your chair, because you're going to go for a wild, wild ride.
The sound you hear is dripping blood. This is the start of Black Sunday.
Cut the fat off the back of a baboon. Boil it down to a pound, get a spoon. Do the eye for a fry frying backwards. Take the jaws and the paws off a coon. Take your time, I ain't tried for good cooking. But the rest of this mess ain't good looking. Take the fleas from the knees of a demon. Tell your pals and gals and country. To the feast, put the beast of the mouth out. They make wine with the fine and the dough down. Get the cat for the back for who stays. And the feast with the beast of the mouth out. Brush your teeth with a piece of a goose toenail. After death, still the breath of a drunken jail. Pull the skin off your friend with a razor blade. In tonight, change tomorrow, bring back yesterday. Take your hip, bite your lip, and shoot your mother-in-law. Put on your gorilla suit, drink some elbow soup, and have them all. Get straight, don't be late, it's time for mad fun. Beast of the mouth, mouth has begun. They make wine for the fine and they throw down. But death for the best for who stays. At the feast with the beast of the mouth mouth. At the feast with the beast of the mouth mouth. How they talk, man? They go like this. How about this? And how did the women sound? What you want when you want to tell them you want some more to eat, man? Well, how about give me some more of that meat there? And pass me some of the inside of that thigh. And spread some bread on it, you know, in between the toes. Yeah, try to get it there. But whoo! Don't say good, man. Give me some more of that inside soul. Yeah. That's what you mean you ain't got no more soul. Keep on eating, man. Feast in the mouth now. Then they try and put the spine in their bones out. They stick their thumb in their eyeballs and make teeth and olives. Yeah, that's what's happening. We can do this stuff and pull out his ribs, man. Let me bite on that chest bone. Sock it to me one time. Give him, brother. Give him.
Well, that sets the scene for the coming New World Order. We have a document prepared by the Department of State, summer 1950, number 23, Foreign Affairs Outlines. The United Nations today. The Security Council's rapid and determined action in calling upon member governments of the United Nations to furnish such assistance to the Republic of Korea as may be necessary to repel the armed attack by the communist regime of North Korea and to restore international peace and security in the area is fresh proof of the real capabilities of the United Nations. It belies the impression held by some of the United Nations as a feeble, sleeping giant. But was this impression ever valid? This is a good time to take another look at the United Nations and to ask a few questions. Just what is the United Nations, and what is it doing in the world today? There are many ways of answering. The way most valuable to you will depend upon where you sit and how closely you have been following international affairs. One thing to remember is that the United Nations is mainly a deliberative body. When there is conflict, the United Nations collects facts, studies them, and then recommends courses of action. Its recommendations carry real weight, for the member nations have obligated themselves to respect them. Even more important, perhaps, United Nations action is backed by the great moral force of world opinion, which no nation dares ignore. And finally, as we have now seen in Korea, United Nations action can also be backed by armed force. Remember, this is dated summer 1950. It is a Foreign Affairs Outline, number 23, Building the Peace, prepared by the Department of State. The 59 member states have pledged themselves to try to live up to the high standards of the United Nations Charter. When any state strays too far from those standards, it faces a hostile world opinion. One of the greatest virtues of the United Nations is that the toughest problems of our day are being worked out in an atmosphere of pledged principles where selfish actions stand out clear and sharp and can be pinned directly on the offending nation. This is a great force for agreement. There have been agreements on ways of helping each other, agreements on food and health problems, on transport and communication matters, on tariffs and trade. There has been agreement on more faithful questions, agreement to stop military action if fighting has already begun, or agreement to keep observers at a trouble spot. The United Nations is more than just a useful device or merely a practical way of getting things done. The United Nations of today mirrors the stresses and strains of our world society. It is not perfect. It will become increasingly effective as the sovereign nations who belong to it learn a great deal more about getting along together. The United Nations does represent, however, a long start toward world unity. It is today the means and the main center of action toward a lasting world peace. In the daily work of seeking and finding agreement, the United Nations is growing steadily more useful and efficient. Most of the nations today are finding its facilities and services to be invaluable avenues to agreement and their main available reliance in dealing with the Soviet question. As a result, many of the conflicts and problems which the governments cannot solve readily by their own efforts wind up somewhere in the United Nations system. The proof is visible in the UN workload. Thousands of productive meetings are held each year on hundreds of diverse subjects, and on problems in the economic and social field, many non-member nations and private international organizations may work together with the 59 members under the auspices of the UN or of one of its specialized agencies. Out of this beehive activity, notice the code word there, folks, out of this beehive activity emerges the truest picture of the United Nations, an intergovernmental organization hard at work helping peoples to help themselves and to help each other, so that all men can eat better, live longer, get about more easily, and enjoy to the fullest their rights and freedoms. And if you buy that, you need a wheelchair of some sort, folks. Make sure that you don't get caught in that little... trap they're setting for you. Naturally, the United Nations has not reached its present nature without picking up scars along the way. It has had to make its way in a hard-bitten world in which a few nations still insist on playing the lone wolf. Yet in growing, it has sprouted some unexpected talents. It has developed a toughness and adaptability which have made it a major influence in shaping world events. In 1945, the people of the world, in whose hopes and dreams the United Nations had taken root, had very big plans for their offspring. They looked on it as a quick and easy way to enduring peace. 5 years have passed since then, and a peaceful world still is nowhere in sight. Some people have begun to wonder and to ask questions about the real value of the United Nations. The United Nations' inability to bring off a miraculous ending of the Cold War has obscured its great worth as a world forum. As a focal point of world opinion, and as a central nervous system of the complex world community, everyone needs, therefore, to take a fresh glance at the United Nations now and then, so as to be able to see its accomplishments as clearly as its limitations. The United Nations was set up, above all, to eliminate war. Its activities have been along three main lines. 1. Collective security actions, including the peaceful settlement of disputes by the Security Council and the General Assembly, and efforts to set up international disarmament and atomic energy control plans. Now remember, this is written in 1950. I'm going to read that again. Collective security actions, including the peaceful settlement of disputes by the Security Council and the General Assembly, and efforts to set up international disarmament and atomic energy control plans. 2. The building of a more just, lawful, and orderly world society. 3. Work which is directed toward a wider sharing of the good things of life among all peoples and an increase in the abundance of good things. In other words, redistribution of wealth, folks. Take from the haves and give to the have-nots. Take from those who work and produce and create and give to those who do nothing. Socialism and socialists suck. And they're out there sucking somewhere in the world right now, ladies and gentlemen. It might be said, in other words, that the United Nations program is peace through united action, peace through law and order, and peace through well-being. A knowledge of major developments in these lines is necessary for an understanding of the United Nations today. Peace through united action suggests the whole UN idea of nations working together for common goals. More specifically, it might refer to unity of nations in discouraging aggression and in resisting it by force if necessary. Once aggression has been done away with, freedom can flourish as never before. The main United Nations arm of unity against aggression is the Security Council, which is flanked by the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission, the Commission for Conventional Armaments, and the Military Staff Committee. We'll see if this is our guest on the phones now. If it is, you're going to have some revelations here. Good evening. Oh, that's one of our little socialist cutie pies. A little socialist cutie pie sweetie poo who has his little diaper just full of poo-poo, waiting for somebody to come and change it. Mothers, I want you to look around you now. If your little socialist kitty has strayed from your skirt hem, please round him up, for he's fixing to dirty up your floor. They're out there, ladies and gentlemen. Remember I told you that socialists are little children, always have been and always will. That's why they must have a great totalitarian state to take care of them, to feed them and clothe them, to put them in their crib at night and make sure the railing is up so that they cannot roll over and fall out, to change their little poopy diapers whenever they have their little accidents. Oh, yes. And they must be watched constantly, for they never, ever grow up. And they constantly, always, and forever prove me right. Don't you, little feller? I love to play with them. And I love it when they try to play with me, for they always slink away with their tail between their legs, their face as red as Rudolph's nose at midnight on Christmas Eve, trying very hard to pull some more lies out of their bag of lies in order to confront facts. For that is the only way that they can do it. The already hard task of this arm of the United Nations was compounded early this year by a Soviet bloc boycott. Although the Soviet Union has now returned to the Security Council, the planning for worldwide regulation and limitation of conventional armaments and the setting up of troop contingents for the Security Council continue to be slowed by Soviet obstruction. Even more serious, the repeated refusals of the Soviet Union to accept the United Nations majority approved plan for atomic energy control have made it rather pointless to continue discussions on that vital problem. Fortunately, these facts are only part of the United Nations story. In areas where the Soviet Union is not immediately involved, the Security Council continues to have real effect. And in areas where the Soviets are involved but cannot exercise a veto, the record of the past 5 years shows that the United Nations can act effectively. In the field of collective security action, where the going has been roughest, there have been major accomplishments. The United Nations Security Council has had dramatic success in the withdrawal of Soviet troops from Iran, in bringing peace to Indonesia and Greece, and in stopping bloodshed in Palestine and in the Kashmir dispute between India and Pakistan. The Security Council also contributed, it will be remembered, to the ending of the ominous Berlin blockade. The General Assembly has begun to figure large in the settlement of international disputes, partly because of the growing concern and interest of all the United Nations members, and partly because of obstacles put in the way of Security Council action. In the case of conflicts, the Assembly studies, make recommendations, and like the Security Council, may send out special missions to look into the trouble at first hand. Assembly action focuses world attention on conflicts, clarifies the issues, and brings great pressure to bear on wrongdoers. We'll see. Oh, it's our little socialist poo-poo diaper again. You couldn't hear him, folks, but we could. He's a coward. He sits there and punches on his telephone rather than speaking. And Steve will have someone over to your house within about 10 minutes to tie your little hands behind your little back so that it doesn't happen again. Peace through law and order. This is a great cry of the socialists. Peace through law and order is another basic United Nations objective. Only an orderly society can be a peaceful society. Under the United Nations, there emerges steadily a growing body of law and legal precedent approved and accepted by almost all nations. The growth of international law is bound, of course, to be slow. It involves a compromise between legal systems as diverse as those of Mexico and Russia, Egypt and Denmark. Or Iceland and India. Nevertheless, this United Nations program will form a growing foundation for a world rule of law under which nations will bring their disputes to established courts of justice just as individuals do today. Now understand, folks, if these little poo-poo potty britches socialists get their way, we won't have any sovereignty. In other words, the law will be the law of the world, the law of the United Nations. If you commit a crime in the United States, you could be taken to Denmark to be tried by who knows who, and who knows what kind of penalty you would be handed out for whatever it is that you did wrong. We know that almost anything that you can think of doing in this world is wrong to socialists, especially if they don't control it. And if they do control it, you must conform to their little game. And folks, it is a game, for they are children, but you play their game, you play with very serious consequences. You see, they're spoiled little children, spoiled brats, in fact. If they don't get their way, they kill everybody in sight. Murder. And if you're lucky and they have a need for workers somewhere, they will round you off and take you to a labor camp from which you might be able to escape, although it's doubtful, not too many people ever have, where you will work and slave away the rest of your existence until you die. Unfortunate, but true. The chief judicial organ of the United Nations is the International Court of Justice, Supreme Court of the Nations, it might be called. Its 15 eminent judges sit at The Hague, Netherlands, on contentious cases and give advisory opinion on matters such as interpretations of international law and the United Nations Charter. That was in 1950. They're doing much greater things now. And within 5 years, folks, you might find yourself standing in front of their court. The most publicized case thus far is the Corfu Channel case, in which the court awarded England about £840,000. That's almost $2.4 million at that date and time, as compensation following the damaging of two British destroyers by mines in Albanian waters. While the court has no enforcement power, the Charter provides for potential action by the Security Council to give effect to the judgments of the court if nations do not of their own will bow to its authority. The United Nations International Law Commission, made up of 15 noted jurists, has the job of encouraging a progressive development of international law. This commission is charged by the General Assembly with giving a consistent shape and form to the growing body of precedents, principles, and accepted procedures. It is now hard at work surveying international law and selecting topics for codification. As a part of its assignment, the Commission is currently drafting a declaration on the rights and duties of states, preparing a code of offenses against the peace and security of mankind, and examining the possibility of establishing an international criminal court. Hello.
This is U.S. West. You have a collect call from
Sheriff Mac.
To accept the charges, press 1 now, or say yes after the tone. To refuse the charges, hang up now.
Yes.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Sheriff Mac, is that you?
Yes. Did you want me to call me back, or?
No, this is fine. You're on the air right now.
Okay.
The whole world is out there listening. Sheriff, why don't you give us some background? Where'd you grow up? Who are you? How'd you get to be sheriff?
Well, yeah, that is an interesting story. I was born in St. Louis when my father was stationed in the FBI. And he later got transferred to his hometown, which is the Gila Valley of Arizona, known as Graham County. My father was born in a small town in Glenbar, and then later was assigned there with the FBI. And I moved to the Gila Valley when I was about 2 or 3 years old, and grew up there, and graduated from high school and junior college there, and went on a mission to Latin America, and came home and married a girl from the Gila Valley, and then I went to Brigham Young University, where I pursued some studies, and I also tried to get in the FBI, and that didn't work out, and so I applied at the Provo Police Department, which was a police department I worked for part-time as a cadet while I was putting myself through school, and learned that it was a very good department headed by a very good chief, and I served there as a police officer, as a hostage negotiator, as a Spanish interpreter, as a sergeant, a detective, youth officer, school detective, and undercover narcotics officer, which was a real education in and of itself. And then in 1988, some family and friends from the Gila Valley called me and kept on me a lot about coming home to run for sheriff. So my wife and I talked about it, decided that we would try it, and I moved home in May of 1988 from Provo, just a few months before the election, and campaigned real hard, and was successful in running for sheriff, and was elected in November of 1988, and I was reelected in November of 1992.
You know, I'm curious, Sheriff Mack, after the Gordon Call case and the Randy Weaver episode and the MOVE group in Philadelphia and recently the Waco fiasco, do you still harbor desires to be a part of the FBI?
Not really, and there's some good and bad people in the FBI. As a matter of fact, the deputy director, who was actually the acting director until Mr. Free was appointed, is my cousin,
uh-huh.
My dad's nephew, and I know he's a good man, and in fact, he was the one that was defending the Waco incident before Congress, and I know him really well, and I know he wouldn't do anything intentionally wrong, although I have some very strong opinions about some of those cases myself and how they were mishandled. But at the same time, it's just like our government. Our government is very good the way it was outlined by our founding fathers, but there are some people inside it that have corrupted it. And I would not want to be in the FBI right now, although I do not consider the FBI a bad organization, generally speaking. There are some people in there who take orders from top politicians and have been trained in military fashion that you do not question orders, that you just follow orders blindly, and sometimes that's good and sometimes it's not. I, for one, will not follow orders from the federal government blindly, and that's why I'm in the situation I'm in right now.
And that's why you're on this show tonight.
Right.
I would remind all of those people who think that they have to follow orders blindly that that's exactly a point that was brought up as no defense at Nuremberg following World War II. Sheriff Mack, we've got just about a minute and a half, then have to take a short break, and then we're going to come back. But real quickly, first let me ask you, how long have you been sheriff of Graham County?
I'm going on getting into 6 years right now.
6 years. So you're not a newcomer to being sheriff at all.
No.
And I'm sure you realize that the sheriff is the highest elected official in the county, and in all actuality is the most powerful law enforcement official in the United States.
Yes, I've heard that, but there's a lot of people that will argue with you on that.
Well, they might argue with us, but we're in the process of trying to straighten this country up and take it back and get it back into our hands. They've just about thrown the last vestige of everything that our forefathers set up right into the trash can. And on this program, we've revealed through United States government documentation that the Constitution is subservient to the United Nations Charter. The United Nations Charter has no Bill of Rights, and they are in the process of dissolving sovereign nations and forming a one-world totalitarian socialist government. And we believe, because of the Disarmament Act and the Disarmament Agency and the documents that we've uncovered so far, that things like the Brady Bill and the other legislation that they have implemented and the executive orders that have been signed to limit or restrict the ownership of guns in the United States is a part of disarming the American people so that they will have no armed civil uprising against the destruction, the final destruction, overt destruction of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short pause.
I've been standing there for centuries.
Yes, I suppose it seems like it's raining, but you're not wet.
No, I'm not, am I?
Where are you coming from?
I was watching a wonderfully terrifying double feature movie. I was a teenage Frankenstein in Blood of Dracula.
Oh?
Professor Frankenstein created a teenage monster to bring havoc and terror to all who meet him. But he left a few parts out, particularly in the poor lad's face.
May we take
and the vampire in Blood of Dracula, quite unfriendly except when hungry, than any friend will do for a few ghastly moments.
Please,
Yes, I must leave you.
But there's nothing here but an old cemetery.
Yes, I know. I want to meet some old friends here.
Folks, I want to spend as much time with Sheriff Mack as we possibly can tonight, so the commercial is going to be short. Call 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646, and do it right now, and if you don't do it, I'm going to get you.
They said it couldn't be done.
Couldn't be done. Couldn't be done. Couldn't be done.
But now, at last, I've created the Frankenstein Monster.
This is Count Dracula speaking. The Frankenstein monster has escaped.
Don't try to hide. I'm here, you see.
We're here in Washington at a special meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, the president.
Hello, baby.
Mr. President, what happens if the monster cannot be stopped? Army radar has picked up the monster, heading toward Philadelphia.
This is what Brookman Easthoff reporting. We're now here in Philadelphia, where the entire U.S. Army is awaiting the Battle of the Century. We spotted the monster coming this way. It's Frankenstein.
Just call my name.
The army has opened fire on the monster. But he still keeps coming. Hold your fire. Dr. Frankenstein's chief assistant is stepping forward. He's trying to speak to the monster.
You don't remember me, but I remember you.
The monster is attacking him. All efforts to stop Frankenstein have failed. There is only one hope left.
I, Count Dracula, will speak to the monster in the only language he understands.
Come at prima, beauty prima, come at all.
It's no use. Nothing can stop the monster. He's heading into the local television studio. Frankenstein is dancing on bandstand. It looks like all the monster wanted to do was dance with the teenagers.
Oh, baby, that's what I like!
Of course, the story you've just heard, well...
Well, you know why he wanted to dance with the teenagers? Because Frankenstein was a socialist, and remember, they're all kids, children. That's why they have to have a big daddy to take care of them and make sure that they have work and clothing and food and everything that you can think of, protection against crime, protection against this, protection against that, protection against rain, and that's what's coming. One of the things that has happened recently, as we all know, and as we've all been concerned about, is the first real infringement from the federal government upon the right to keep and bear arms is the Brady Bill. It's the foot in the door. What did you think when you first heard that, Sheriff Mack?
Well, I was against the Brady Bill from day one, but I never really got into the specifics of the bill until recently when the ATF sent me a copy of their interpretation of the bill, and I also had a meeting with the rest of the sheriffs in the state with some ATF representatives about 2 weeks ago in Phoenix, and after I went over this document that they gave me, it didn't take me long to look at this and see that it was nothing but a pile of crud.
What specifically is in the bill, or not in the bill, because that's right, they wouldn't give you a copy of the bill, would they?
Well, they didn't at first, and I don't know why they didn't. It would seem to me that it would be just as easy to give a copy of a bill as it would the interpretation thereof.
Well, they don't want you to interpret. They want you to do what they say to do.
Well, that was my inclination also, but be that as it may, their interpretation was totally disgusting, and it was totally a violation of the Constitution, a violation of every public official's oath of office, and it was something that I determined at the time that I could have no part of.
It also violates the Constitution of the state of Arizona, is that correct?
Absolutely. The Constitution of the state of Arizona in Section 26, entitled Bearing Arms, states that the individual citizen's right to defend himself or the state of Arizona by way of maintaining arms shall not be impaired. Now, it didn't say infringed, but it said impaired. I believe infringed and impaired are synonymous and mean about the same thing, but it doesn't seem like politicians read the same dictionary I read.
That's true, and it's obvious that they don't really read the second article and amendment, which clearly states that a militia being necessary to a free state, which means it clearly says that you can't have a free state unless you have a militia.
Right.
And then it goes on to say the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed because the law itself defines the militia as every able-bodied man or boy between the ages of 17 and 43.
Right. And that is also in the U.S. Code, Code 10, and I can't remember the other section on that, but you're right, it does define the militia as being the people.
Also, I believe it was in 1981, the United States Senate passed a resolution declaring that the National Guard or any part of the military is not the militia.
That's true.
And they declared that the militia is the body of the whole people. So, in light of that, how can they expect anyone to enforce this Brady Bill?
Well, that's my concern, too. It seems like there's just too many chiefs and mayors, city councils that aren't addressing the real issue here. And the real issue here, first and foremost, is that the Constitution does not leave this open to debate. It is quite clear that you cannot infringe upon these rights. And how a person that has sworn an oath in the name of God to uphold and defend the United States Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and then say that it's okay to have gun control and that we should have gun control laws, it's absolutely flabbergasting to me that a person that has sworn such an oath could go back on it or could be ignorant enough to go back on it, whether it's malicious intent or ignorance. Either way, it's destructive.
That's true. And the only truly legal way to take the guns out of the hands of the American people is to repeal the second article and amendment of the Constitution.
Exactly. That has to be addressed before you can pursue any law the Second Amendment would have to be stricken or changed.
That's correct. Were you aware that Mr. Owens of New York has introduced a resolution in the House to repeal the Second Article of the Amendment?
No, I'm not aware of that, but I certainly wish him all the bad luck in the world.
I love the way you put it. Sheriff Mack, what do the people in your county think about this?
Well,
this law first, and then we'll talk about what you're going to do about it.
I'm a little uncertain on that. I think a good measuring stick, though, is how well Proposition 200 did in Arizona. And for your listeners, Proposition 200 was a bill,
referendum.
Yeah, referendum in the state of Arizona that went before the vote of the people in last election when I was reelected, and it basically stated that steel jaw traps could not be used, but it also outlawed all trapping of all animals and all lethal means to kill animals, which means if you interpret that, what it did, it left it totally for interpretation to the courts.
And we know what the interpretation would have been by reading the past rulings on the definition of the word lethal,
right,
and the definition of the word weapon. It would have completely made illegal any killing of any animal within the state of Arizona. What happened on that referendum? I know, but...
It lost in just an enormous landslide, almost 80% to 20%. And mainly, the main emphasis of that loss was because people in Arizona were fearful that this was the beginning of gun control. And this referendum was defeated about by the same percentage, 80 to 85% to 15 to 20% in our county of Graham. So I can only take that as a clear message sent by the people from Arizona and Graham County that no gun control would be tolerated. There are some people who are against what I'm doing. They equate violence with guns, and some of these are good people, and I acknowledge that. And some of them are good friends of mine. However, they are misdirected, and I'd love to sit down and talk with them and tell them, let's just go by the law. Let's just go by what the Constitution says, both of the United States and Arizona. And if we don't like it, then let's try to change it. But in the meantime, we all have to go by it because that's what we've sworn to do.
Well, it seems like all of these people are always harping law. More law this, more law that.
Right.
We need this, or you're not doing that. But when the law doesn't agree with them, then they don't care much about the law. And I have a big problem with them with that because this country was based upon the law and the supreme law being the Constitution.
Right.
And we must first follow the Constitution, and no law can be made that conflicts with the Constitution.
Right.
If it does, in legal definition, it is null and void from the date it was passed. It has no effect whatsoever. Sheriff Mack, what do you intend to do?
Well, right now I have contacted a lawyer who works for the NRA, and let me say right this, let me make a disclaimer. I do not belong to the NRA. I have never belonged to the NRA. I am not a hunter. I've never been deer hunting in my life, but I will die for the rights of those who wish to do so. And so I contacted the NRA to ask them if they knew of a way that I could file a lawsuit against the federal government to prove publicly and in the courts that this law was unconstitutional, illegal, and without merit, and that it had no authority to ask me to do anything. The lawyer I spoke to said that I could do it and that they were glad to hear from me and that they would get the paperwork rolling and do it for me for free. However, he did say that I would need to contact a lawyer in the state of Arizona who could do the actual legwork of taking the paperwork to the federal court for me.
Right.
And so I now have a lawyer from Tucson who is helping me also, and I am going to need, and I might as well announce this at this time, I am going to need private donations for this cause, for the legal fees, and I'm fully prepared to take this all the way to the Supreme Court if I have to. I don't think it'll go that far because I think anyone will see that it's a ridiculous law. And I think it'll be easy to defeat. But you never know. The way our present court systems have been going lately, you just never know what's going to happen. So anyway, I have informed the county where I reside that I will not use taxpayer dollars to fight this fight. And so I am requesting that if anybody would like to help in this fight, that they send donations, either cash or check, to the Graham County Sheriff's Office in care of Sheriff Richard Mack. The address is 523 10th Avenue, 10 Avenue, 523 10th Avenue, Safford, S-A-F-F-O-R-D, Arizona, 85546.
Repeat that one more time, Sheriff Mack, so everybody can get that. You're going to get a flood of donations from this radio audience. I hope you're prepared for that.
Well, I need them, quite honestly, and I hope that happens. And let me thank everybody beforehand. Again, the address is Sheriff Richard Mack, Graham County Sheriff's Office. In fact, if you just send it to Graham County Sheriff's Office in Safford, Arizona, it'll get there. But the street address is 523 10th Avenue, Safford, Arizona, 85546.
Okay, folks, you heard that, and I'm going to set an example. Sheriff Mack, you're going to get a check for $100 from me and Carolyn and Annie and Pooh, and I want every family out there in the listening audience to send $100 to Sheriff Mack, because I'm telling you right now, the way these federal courts work is that they will... rule against this, hoping that, as most people do, that they'll just quit and go away.
Right.
But if it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, they will have to uphold the second article and amendment to the Constitution because they can do nothing else. The reason the federal courts do that is most people don't have the money or the time, and also they get scared sometimes. They get intimidated, and they won't appeal as high as they should, and therefore... they lose when, if they just would have stuck it for the golden mile, they would have won their case.
That's another thing that scares me, is that they are appointed by some of the legislators and people who enacted this bill.
Yes.
That does worry me. However, if we do not win, and I will consult with legal counsel as to whether or not I can simply just, right off the bat, just ignore the law. And that definitely is an option I am considering.
Well, actually, if it's a federal law, how can they require a county sheriff to enforce it?
Exactly. It doesn't apply to me because I don't work for the federal government. I'm not a federal agent.
And you have no jurisdiction over federal property or federal buildings or federal land or federal territories.
Right. And they have none over me. And they can't tell me what to do. As a matter of fact, if they set this precedent, then it would enable any county government or state government for that matter, but any, for instance, this is what I compare it to, it would be like the county of Graham making a law that would require the police departments within the county to work now for Graham County. They should enact a law saying that for instance, in my county, there would be three other police departments in my county besides the sheriff's office. Well, Graham County supervisors should now enact a law saying that all other police officers within the county of the other cities will now have to enforce county law and have to help the sheriff in all his duties. And boy, I'll tell you, that would really raise a lot of stink. But the county of Graham cannot order these other jurisdictions to do their bidding.
Mm-hmm.
Just as the federal government cannot order sheriffs throughout the country to do their bidding. And even if they did pass this law and say, okay, we're going to send in ATF and FBI to enforce this law, it still would not be lawful.
Well, I also think that you would find yourself backed up by the full force of the unorganized militia of the state of Arizona, which, contrary to popular belief, exists, is strong, and is ready and willing to protect and defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
And I think you're exactly correct.
Well, Sheriff Mack, I want to tell you, you know, I and many other people out there look at you as one of the true leaders and heroes that are emerging during these times when we need people. that can the help the sheeple, as I call them, get their heads screwed on straight and figure out which way to go.
Well, that was, if I am, it was quite by accident, and I didn't mean for all this to happen. I thought this would stay within Graham County. I was on a radio talk show in my county, and the show host, news director, interviewed me about this last Monday morning, and I just simply that this deal was absolutely an abomination, and told him why, and read some of the parts from it, and he says, you know, I'm going to put this on the AP wire. And I said, oh, okay, and I didn't think it would mean anything to anybody, really. I just felt I was doing what every sheriff should be doing in the nation.
Well, that's exactly what you are doing, but the fact that you're not just shows how far down we've sunk and how bad the situation really is, that a person who really is doing his job is doing something so extraordinary. It doesn't speak well of the American people to me.
Well, I think it's a matter of just what you said. I think it's most people just don't know. Most of them have not read the Constitution. And, you know, the last time any of them studied it was probably in 8th grade at junior high.
Now, you know that John was looking at Susie, and Susie was trying to find out if he was looking at her without letting me know that, and they didn't care about it then.
That's right. That's right. I couldn't really remember anything about it. I actually started studying the Constitution as a police officer in Utah in about 1985, and I attended a seminar that was approved by the Law Enforcement Council in the state of Utah, and the name of the training was Constitutional Studies for Police Officers, and it was one of the best classes I've ever been to. The instructor was W. Cleon Skousen, who I'm sure you're aware of,
mm-hmm.
And he taught a two-day course just to police officers about the Constitution, not case law, which can and cannot be part of the Constitution sometimes,
mm-hmm.
But it was just about learning about the Constitution, the thing we said that we swore an oath to uphold and defend, and I was absolutely amazed about the simplicity of it and how easy it is to understand, and what a beautiful, beautiful document it was. And what I was even more impressed with is that the instructor showed us the miraculous nature by which it was founded in the first place. And at that time, I became a true convert to the historical perspective and to the value of the Constitution and how absolutely valuable it is to our country and to our freedoms and our liberties. And I will never, never do anything intentionally to violate that document.
Well, that's wonderful. All Americans really should feel that way.
Every police officer.
Absolutely. I am just amazed at the police officers across this country who are violating the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights, on a daily basis, bashing down doors without warrants, denying the freedom of speech. I could go on and on and on and on, because literally, and this is the truth, in the law today, the Bill of Rights does not exist. And you get no justice in court. What you get is just us, and the us is not anybody listening to this broadcast, I can guarantee you. No one in the history of the world was ever free until our forefathers penned the Constitution and the Bill of Rights of the United States of America. And we are the only people who have ever existed on the face of this earth who have truly been free. And even now that we're losing our rights, we still have more freedom than any other people living upon the face of this earth.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
It certainly is. Folks, we have taken down Sheriff Mack's address. So if you didn't get it, call us at 602-333-5174. That's 602-333-5174, and the number will be repeated at the end of this program, and Sheriff Mack will be our guest again at the later program at 9 Pacific, 10 Mountain, 11 Central, and midnight Eastern Standard Time. Sheriff Mack, thank you very much for being our guest during this hour, and we'll see you later.
Okay.
Good night, folks, and God bless you all.
I was a teenage werewolf, the most terrifying picture of our time. I was a teenage werewolf. Fantastic. Bewildering. A motion picture to stand beside the greatest horror stories of all time. I was a teenage werewolf.
Mama said, something weird I'm feeling. I looked in his room, bed wasn't slipping at all. Brother Billy never kissed some more.